The Business Buzz Podcast.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Good day and welcome to the Business Day for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on VAW FM. That's Voice of Wits. We're broadcasting live from our studios here in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Mdiwa Mob, Justice Gavaza, and I'll be your host for today. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to unpack and keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, tax is undoubtedly one of those things that plays a vital role in every aspect of our lives. Everything we spend money on includes tax. However, at a time when the government has committed to a 500 billion rand stimulus package and is at the same time projecting that it will collect up to 350 billion rand less than it expected at the start of the year, the country's finances are actually squarely in focus and in the spotlight. To make things worse, the COVID-19 pandemic has actually left many people and businesses with lower or no incomes to talk about. What does all of this mean as we head into tax season that is set to begin next month? To sort of help us navigate this topic, we'll be speaking to Dr. Sean Muller, a senior economics lecturer at the University of Johannesburg School of Economics, about the place of taxes in the economy and the state of the country's public finances. We then switch over to the micro level, the individual level, as we talk to Ntabeleng Sekabate, who is an executive under the tax department at ENS Africa, about how COVID-19 is likely to impact the upcoming tax collection period. So that's how the show is looking like. Also coming up, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news, and then we'll get into the Buffalo Index where we tell you the state of your 100 Rand. Now, you can engage with us, talk to us on social media. On Facebook, we are VAW FM, that's Voice of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAW FM, and our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. And remember that you can stream us live on vawfm.co.za. Podcasts of the Business Buzz Show are available on iono.fm, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you choose to listen to your podcasts, most recently Spotify as well. And then for our other great content, you can visit vids.journalism.co.za/business. So that's how the show is looking like. Make sure you don't turn that down. Keep it locked. This is 88.1.
Business Rep with Lebo Pasha.
It's time for us to get into the top trending business and economics news of the week. And on the line, we are joined by financial expert Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute. Lebo, greetings to you.
Greetings to you, Mudiwa, and the VAW members. Amen.
Now, I think, one of the places to begin is, what's going on in New Zealand. I understand they've been a bit better about handling this whole coronavirus situation.
So, Mudiwa, the COVID situation keeps improving and getting worse in different parts of the world. So, we're celebrating New Zealand at the beginning of the week. They hadn't gotten any new COVID-19 cases for 100 days, and that was earlier on in the week, up until one family in Auckland has actually got infected, and there's 4 cases all in the same family, and it's suspected that this came from frozen food which was imported into New Zealand. So the situation keeps on changing with COVID, but I think it all points to the fact that we're living in a very different world. Things are not going to go back to the way that they were before.
I'm actually quite scared, in that example. I hadn't heard the actual circumstances that led to that new cases in New Zealand, and the fact that people are getting corona from frozen food. I feel like that's now a new frontier, a whole new risk factor to be thinking about.
Yeah, it sounds strange, but from an investigation that was done, some publications are saying that there's a big possibility it could be from frozen food. I think China has also reported some traces of COVID on frozen food that came from South America. So it is a possibility. I think it goes back again to maintaining good hygiene, wash your hands, wash your food, cook it thoroughly to make sure that you're killing any viruses or bacteria on your food.
No, that is real. Now, another consequence of the lockdowns around coronavirus, especially in South Africa, has been this ongoing battle between alcohol. You know, people want their alcohol. How is that looking on that end? You know, I'm hearing all types of rumors on this end.
Yeah, so we've seen a very broad impact on our economy because of the banning of alcohol. And the reasoning behind it has been given to us repeatedly by the government that the main consideration is the impact it has on capacity in public healthcare, in public hospitals, and casualty. And I think we've all sort of accepted the reasoning, but on the flip side, it's causing a huge impact on our economy because restaurants are big sellers of alcohol, and there are many livelihoods that are impacted by not being able to sell alcohol. So it's not just the production facilities. We've seen both Heineken and AB InBev or SAB communicate that they're going to halt some of their capex or big expansion plans in the country because they're not getting any sales. And also there's all the other support industries in between, so your production, your logistics participants, the guys who get the beer to site, and also what we're seeing a huge reaction from is the restaurants, because people who drink alcohol tend to stay a lot longer, I assume, at restaurants, and that is really impacting sales because people know that they aren't able to get the alcohol there. But strangely, we've seen The Economist come out with an article saying that not all the teapots in Johannesburg have tea. So it's not just rooibos that's in these teapots. It could possibly be other things that are probably drank with tonic.
I actually enjoyed that notion, and I could literally see, because I feel like it harkens back to that whole speakeasy sort of notion of the 1910s and 20s in America, prohibition, people coming up with all types of tricks to get their tea, quote unquote. Apart from that, load shedding seems to have become another reality. We're experiencing it over the last couple of days.
Yes, we're back to level 2 load shedding, and I think this is going to hit the economy a lot harder again, because nobody expected to have any load shedding during a lockdown when there's less activity and people are at home. Our biggest consumers of electricity are actually big industry. So it is a bit strange having load shedding while we are in lockdown. So this is going to be a bit worrying as well for the economy, especially because people are now working from home. So it's a very different set of concerns from before. I've personally been impacted by it, so working at home and not having power means that our internet connectivity is affected and you cannot be productive at home. So we're not sure what kind of impact it's going to have on the economy, but it's definitely not going to be good with everybody working from home.
Just as a follow-up to that one, do you not think that the impact might even be further exacerbated if indeed, as some people suggest, we move to level 2, as is being, you know, spoken about in some, you know, in some corners of the economy? If we do move to level 2, that's practically most business activities open and greater demand on the grid. Does load shedding not then become an even higher risk then?
It's going to definitely be a much higher risk, because it means that electricity generation is not going to meet up with the demand that's going to be out there. We expect demand to increase significantly when we move to level 2. So definitely, I think we should be worried about how it's going to impact us. And the bigger impact now is because of people no longer being centralized. You're not having meetings with your colleagues in a boardroom. If one or two people are not present in certain meetings, there's probably decisions that can't be made. And even with the new businesses coming online, it would probably be the factories and other larger consumers of electricity that would be impacted on the production side. But on the services side and broad connectivity and ability to continue with commercial activities, I think we'll all be impacted in some way or another.
Okay, cool. So that's been us with Lebo Pasha, who is the General Manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute, giving us a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news in our business wrap, talking about the COVID-19 and how it's being managed in New Zealand on the global stage, then coming back home to talk about the effect of the alcohol ban on the economy and how it has stopped certain companies from actually spending some of their planned capital expenditure, and then ending off with some, you know, concerning news just around how we've started experiencing load shedding again and how that might be a bigger risk going forward, especially as people are working from home. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we get into the business. We get into the business of your Buffalo in our Buffalo Index.
Business Wrap with Lebo Pasha. The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
In today's Buffalo Index, let's imagine for a moment that your 100 Rand was being taxed at some of the highest tax rates in the world, where some of the highest all-in average personal income tax rates at an average wage rate for a single person with no children. So let's take that scenario. You have no children. These are the average, you have an average wage, and we're going to relate and say if you were earning 100 Rand and we applied some of the world's highest tax rates, what would that actually mean? So at number five, if you were in Hungary, your 100 Rand, for every 100 Rand that you would earn, you would be forking out 34 Rand and 50 cents because their tax rate is 34.5%. In Austria, which is coming in at number four, you'd be forking out close to 35 Rand with 34 Rand and 90 cents because that's a 34.9% income tax rate. In Denmark, you are looking at 36.1% or 36 Rand for every Buffalo that you'd be earning. And then the number two goes to, you know, the economic powerhouse in Europe, that is Germany. And for that country, you'd be paying 39.7%. At number one, if you found yourself in Belgium, for every 100 Rand that you earn, you would be forking over 42 Rand for every 100 Rand to SARS. So that's what your 100 Rand looks like within the context of some of the highest tax rates in the world. But whilst we are here, let's talk about the country's finances. According to Minister Tito Mboweni's supplementary budget given a few months ago, SA's debt to GDP ratio is expected to reach 82% by the end of this year. And what that basically means is it is a measurement of how much debt is actually going to be paid back by the country as a proportion of each rand that is earned by the country. So if we say that at 82%, it means that for every 100 rand, for example, the government will be owing 82 rand to someone. And that's a somewhat conservative projection that's been given there. Some people actually have this closer to 90%, some even over 100%. So that's what the country's buffaloes would look like if we were at the end of the day looking at each buffalo within that context. So that's what the Buffalo Index is looking like today. On the other side of this, we get into the main topic.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz. More justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz, and as we said at the start of the show today, we are talking about the country's taxes. We're talking about tax season, which is coming up next month. And before we get into it, though, remember that you can engage with us on Facebook. We have RFM, that's Voice of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page, that is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Now, to start the conversation around taxes, we thought that we would start by looking at the bigger picture, looking at what taxes mean for our broader economy, because taxes are the money that is being used by our government to do what it does, taking care of our public finances, making sure that schools, roads are maintained, are developed, and the like. And to sort of help us to unpack what the state of those public finances sort of looks like, we are joined on the line by Dr. Sean Muller, who is a senior lecturer at the University of Johannesburg's School of Economics. Dr. Sean, greetings to you.
Greetings. Thanks for having me.
No. Thank you. I think just as a good jumping off point for our listeners, can you give us a sense of what the country's public finances actually look like and mean? Because I think we all dread paying taxes, but in the bigger picture, what are we contributing to?
Thanks. Well, I should say that public finances were not in a great state even before the current pandemic and the lockdown that we've implemented in response to that. If you go back to about 2014, 2015, the Minister of Finance at the time, or Ministers of Finance, were promising to stabilize national debt at around 40%, 50% of GDP, so 40 to 50% of the size of the economy. And now in the most recent budget, the optimistic projection is that debt will rise to about 90% of GDP. So things have become dramatically worse, and you know, they were already worse before the pandemic because of slow economic growth. Tax collection was below what the Treasury had expected or hoped for. So you know, we were already in a difficult situation, and that's only become more difficult. You know, in relation to the actual usage of tax, of course, I mean, your listeners will be well aware of the many issues of corruption, both you know, small scale but also large scale, when it comes to a very important infrastructure projects, whether social infrastructure or economic infrastructure. And so that's really it's a big issue, both in terms of service delivery, economic growth, and then of course the tax payment itself, because if citizens don't believe that their taxes are being properly used, they're going to do as much as they can to avoid paying taxes, which is just going to compound the problem further.
Sort of as a follow-up to that, I think each year we sort of hear some projections coming out from the South African Revenue Service, which collects taxes on behalf of the government, and we hear their projections, and I think roughly over the last 2 to 3 years they've been collecting about, you know, 1.2 to maybe 1.5 trillion rand each year. Is that to say that's how much money the government actually spends in a year, or is that just part of the funding that actually goes into what the government needs to do?
Right, so it's a good indication of how much the government spends, but every year, in pretty much all recent years, the government has a deficit, which means that it spends more than it raises in taxes, and to cover that deficit, it borrows from local and international lenders. And there's nothing wrong with that. It makes sense in many instances for governments to borrow to fund investment and to a lesser extent to fund service delivery. The question is whether the borrowing generates economic growth or revenue that we can ultimately use to pay that back. And the problem in the South African situation in the last decade in particular, since the financial crisis in 2008 and then the poor governance under the Zuma administration subsequent to that, is that government debt's been increasing. So the government's been borrowing more and more, but the economy has not been growing faster, and if anything, economic growth has been slowing down or becoming negative, and tax collection, as I said before, has repeatedly been lower than expected. So the result is we've been borrowing all this money, but it's not yielding the desired return, which means at some point we're not going to be, if we carry on this trajectory, at some point we're not going to be able to pay it back.
And to sort of further exacerbate what you're talking about, we've heard a lot even before COVID-19 came into effect about a shrinking tax base. I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but I once heard that about 10% of the country's population is the one that's actually contributing to the pot. That's actually the collections from SARS. How do you think all of these issues have been, further exacerbated by COVID-19?
Right. So I'm not entirely sure whether the tax base was shrinking prior to the pandemic or if it was just stagnating. The difference being, you know, so essentially staying the same proportion of the population, whereas what we would actually like is for a growing proportion of the population to be paying tax. The thing is that the Treasury and SARS did manage to increase the tax base from the mid to late 1990s, you know, basically from the apartheid era, partly by lowering tax rates and bringing more people into the net, and that paid off at the time. But you see, the thing is that, of course, when economic activity slows down, there's just going to be less people who are able to contribute. You know, so in that sense, the best way of growing the tax base is to grow the economy. The fact that there's a relatively small proportion of the population who are contributing to tax is sometimes framed in a rather dubious way to sort of emphasize the role those individuals are playing and so forth. And yes, that's true to a degree, but of course it also reflects the fact that we live in a highly unequal society. So, you know, a large proportion of the population are unemployed. You can't exactly expect them to pay tax, can you? And then there are others who are employed but living off very low wages. So, you know, partly it's a function of the fact that the economy hasn't grown as we would like, and partly it's a function of very high rates of inequality. And now with the pandemic, you know, it's just made the situation so much worse because, first of all, with the lockdown shut down large parts of the economy, and so naturally those parts will have less capacity to pay tax, whether we're talking about the companies paying tax on profits or the employees paying tax on their earnings. The medium to long term effects will likely be that there'll be, you know, parts of those sectors will simply not recover. So definitely the pandemic and our responses to the pandemic will shrink the tax base. I think there's no doubt about that.
And further to, it's as if we just keep adding issues, you know. If I was the finance minister, it just seems as if things just keep getting worse, because on top of all that, you've got an alcohol and tobacco ban, and you have players in those industries arguing that the closure of their industries is actually going to lead to even less money being collected by the government. Is that true?
It's definitely true on the face of it. I think the question is, how do we interpret that? And one thing that's been slightly frustrating is that one doesn't see a lot of balance in the public domain about these things. It's been interesting for me that there's been quite a lot of what I would call slight hysteria about tobacco and alcohol bans, and comparatively little attention to the actual question of what is the country's strategy in relation to the pandemic and, you know, the lockdown strategy more broadly. I think it's important to see the alcohol and tobacco bans as really sub-issues within that bigger issue, which is actually not being given as much attention as it deserves. But putting that to one side, yes, it's true, you know, the government levies so-called sin taxes on cigarettes and alcohol, and the argument for that is twofold. On the one hand, is to try and discourage people from over-consuming those goods, because they are harmful to individuals' health, and the other is to raise money, actually in principle, to counteract some of those effects. So if you raise more money through taxes, you can direct redirect that money to the health system that ultimately has to deal with the consequences of excessive alcohol and cigarette consumption. But at the same time, it's also important to remember that in economics we talk about money being fungible. Consumption by consumers is flexible. So if we imagine if there's an alcohol ban and people don't consume alcohol at all, they then have money that they could spend on other things. So it could be that the money gets spent in other parts of the economy. It's not, and the way one sees it framed in the media sometimes, and particularly by these industries, is that the money just vanishes into thin air, and that's misleading. Maybe where the concerns are a bit more valid is when it comes to the illicit market. So when people are buying cigarettes or alcohol illegally under the current lockdown, people are still spending that money. The producers or the middlemen are still getting it, but the government is now not getting any tax revenue at all, or at least during those transactions. And so then that does create a certain set of problems. But you see, again, the question here is about the interaction between public policy relating to the pandemic and public health and these economic questions. I think, again, we need to put them in a broader context, because after all, many people in the media and other commentators happily accepted the strict lockdown that was implemented for a long period of time, when we first started trying to confront the pandemic, without a lot of explanation from the government, without a lot of transparency, and that shut down a very large proportion of the economy. But the government's indicated that it will keep considering the merits of these two restrictions on alcohol and tobacco, and as you probably know and your listeners know, there are some indications that they might lift some of the restrictions. But hopefully those are based on broad considerations about overall public benefits, not just questions of taxation.
And on that issue of taxation and also the policies that you're talking about, it does sound like that National Treasury has a bit of a conundrum on its hands, because you've got rising costs and the fiscus that needs to be spending more money to cope with the current crisis, but at the same time you have a funding crisis, which to your point might not be as bad as some people suggest, because the money for that would have been spent on alcohol and cigarettes might find itself being spent on other goods and services in the economy. Do you think this might be a good time for people to be looking at some of the other tax policies that have caused controversy in the past? I'm just thinking about wealth taxes, for example. Looking at the data, it seems as if personal income tax makes up the broadest contribution to taxes, but I definitely stand to be corrected. What do you think?
Well, I should say that I'm not diminishing the seriousness of the financing situation. It's very serious, and that's reflected in the fact that we just took a 70 billion rand loan from the IMF. I think that was the right move, but it is an indication of where we're at. So all I'm saying is that the way in which the tobacco and alcohol issues are presented is sometimes overly simplistic, but the financing situation is certainly serious. The Treasury and the broader government have got some very difficult decisions to make, and I certainly don't envy them in that regard. When it comes to taxes, the one thing that surprised me is that the Treasury didn't seek to introduce a special income tax in this year's tax proposals that were presented to Parliament. I find that slightly mind-boggling, because we know that we're in a serious fiscal situation. Surely it makes sense to get individuals and companies that are still earning relatively high incomes or relatively high profits to pay a larger share. Maybe that will happen next year or in subsequent years. The alternative, that would be very easy to do, because you just change the marginal income tax rates, for example, at the upper levels, or you increase the corporate profit tax rate. But the alternative, as you say, is to introduce new tax instruments. And there has been a lot of talk about a wealth tax. The thing about the wealth tax is that administratively, it's not that straightforward. Because it would be a new mechanism, it would be on wealth rather than on income. And so, you know, there are various measures that would need to be put in place to make sure that people's wealth is accurately measured, that people don't manage to evade or avoid that tax too easily. So that's something that could only really happen, my sense is, if one looks at the statements made by the Davis Tax Committee, which looked at this. It's something could only happen over, say, 2 to 5 years. And you know, the other thing that I think we need to be frank about is that, you know, my own view is that a wealth tax in South Africa should have been introduced as part of the post-apartheid settlement. It should have been, you know, part of reclaiming back wealth that was made by the white population largely in South Africa during the apartheid period. And unfortunately, many of the beneficiaries have moved that wealth overseas, or they themselves have moved. You know, so bringing in a wealth tax at this point is frankly a little late, but I guess better late than never. But the extent to which it's going to be able to help us with the current fiscal situation is unclear.
And then briefly, as we end off, what's your outlook for the country's public finances, I guess, in the short to medium term?
Well, it's not very good. I think, as I said, you know, the optimistic scenario presented by the Treasury in the most in its adjustment budget to the budget that was presented before the pandemic in February, you know, suggested that debt's going to go to about 90% of GDP. The pessimistic scenario is, you know, 110% or above. And the thing is that the higher that ratio gets, the less likely we are to, or the more likely we are to experience a fiscal crisis. But ultimately, what it's going to rest on is the recovery of the economy. And on that front, you know, the Treasury has been proposing a set of structural reforms. And in principle, yes, we need structural reforms because clearly the economy is not growing. It's being held back by structural factors. Unfortunately, my view is that the structural reforms put on the table by the Treasury are largely unconvincing. They're just a rehashing of slightly ideological positions that were put forward in the 1990s and to some extent not accepted. So that doesn't fill me with great confidence in the ability of the current government to get the economy growing. And without that, the Treasury and the Cabinet will be left with no option really but to start slashing public expenditure in order to keep debt under control. And the thing is that once the government reduces its spending, then that itself slows the economy down. So the danger then is you get into sort of this austerity situation where it greased it, where you know you're cutting public spending, and at the same time by cutting public spending you're harming the economy, which makes you have to cut public spending more. So that's a situation we really need to avoid. But how to do it is unclear. So frankly, my expectations, along with those of unfortunately many others, are quite gloomy. And really, I'm just hoping that we will be able to get through this without a fiscal crisis and without overly harmful effects on the majority of the population, especially the most vulnerable.
So that's been us with Dr. Sean Muller, who is a senior lecturer at the University of Johannesburg School of Economics, just giving us a, you know, sort of high level insights and some thoughts around what the state of public finances are, the contribution that all of our taxes are, you know, sort of giving to the state, and the different funding options that are available to the government. Also just talking about the fact that going forward, public finances are not likely not to be in a pretty state. We're hearing of an optimistic situation of 90% of GDP in terms of debt, whereas the pessimistic sees it at over 100%. So things just need to be right-sized. The economy just needs to grow. So on the other side of this, we're going to be getting a little bit more personal, talking about how you actually contribute to the South African tax base. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
In our COVID business watch, we take a look at the impact of COVID-19 and what it has had on various businesses and industries in and around South Africa. Now for today, our producer Simbarashe Ohonde went and spoke to James Moraleng, who is a fashion designer operating his brand, James Presents. And we basically asked him, as a fashion designer, how has COVID-19 actually impacted his business together with in what ways the pandemic, subsequently the lockdowns and its regulations, have actually forced him to look outside the box, perhaps rethink how business is done. And secondly, how has this period actually influenced the creativity and the designs? And then lastly, what lessons have actually been learned so far, and what advice he would give to some fellow designers out there? Here's what he had to say.
As a fashion designer, COVID-19 has definitely affected my business in the context of immediate sales, because, you know, needless to say, we do not have any events happening. So one of my strongest opportunities was, you know, wedding season, and people are constantly requesting custom-made garments. So because everyone is at home, you kind of have to rethink your plans a little differently. But sales have definitely been affected as a result of COVID-19, and incredibly so. The pandemic has definitely forced me to start thinking a little bit outside the box, because as a result, I found myself having to look at how else do people relax at home, and making garments that are a little bit more, I guess, casual versus the more dressy items that I used to make. And thank goodness I started digging a little deeper into myself creatively, and there are a range of relaxed items that I started to look at and creating, which people really responded well to. So I think that really has helped me a lot in that sense, and it has definitely influenced my creativity and the way that I approach my design process. The lessons that I would say I've learned thus far in my business is to never be scared of making mistakes. The most important thing is to allow yourself to learn from those mistakes. And in terms of the advice that I have for fellow designers, I would say look at this time that we are in as an opportunity to be innovative, to be creative. I am not discouraged by the idea that we are starting to see several businesses closing down. This is our opportunity to push ourselves. Most importantly, as young entrepreneurs, this is honestly our opportunity to push, to be excited, to have a sense of drive, a greater sense of ambition. Push and push and push. Trust me, it will not go unnoticed. It will be so, so worth it in the end. Thank you so much for having me on the show. You can follow our page on Facebook. It is James Presents. And on Instagram, it's james.presents. We hope you like what you see there. Thank you so much.
More justice on the Business Buzz.
We continue our conversation around taxes in the country. We've given you an insight into what the place of taxes is in the broader economy in terms of the government funding its activity. But right now we want to maybe drill down onto sort of the micro or the individual level, and just talk about what tax season is actually going to be looking like as from next month going forward. And to help us unpack these things, we are joined by Ntabi Leng Sekabate, who is an executive under the tax department at ENS Africa. Ntabi Leng, welcome to you. This is not the first time. We actually had you around the same time last year, and, you know, vastly different circumstances that we are now talking to you on. How have you been?
Thanks for having me on. I've been fine. I've been plodding along. I think we all have to adjust to this new normal, so I've been carrying on.
No. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we can shed some light for the listeners just around how people can continue whilst being tax compliant at the same time. So to begin with, a lot of people don't know, when is tax filing season actually starting this year?
Tax filing season actually opens on the 1st of September this year. But France has introduced a new auto-assessment system, and I say that in parentheses. and they're doing the auto-assessments during the month of August, so that should simplify filing your return for most taxpayers quite a bit.
And for people, as a tax expert, would you advise people to take those auto-generated things sort of as viable, or is there still a human input that still needs to be done there?
Well, like I say, it's not really an auto-assessment. It's called an auto-assessment. But what SARS is actually doing is they're doing the filing of your return for you. So when you get the SMS saying, you know, this is your assessment results, whether you owe SARS money or they owe you money, you still need to log on to the SARS e-filing platform or the Mobi app, and you still need to look at the return that has already been populated for you and either accept the assessment or edit it when you don't agree with something. So they've simplified it in that the form is filled out for you, the actual return is filled out for you, but you still need to go back and check that everything is correctly done and then accept it. So if you get your SMS, it doesn't mean that, you know, everything is done for you and you can just sit back and relax. You still need to go and accept that assessment for it to become, you know, final.
And for all of that, it's an interesting time for them to be bringing in these sort of new changes, part of the way to make things a bit easier for people to file their taxes. But I wanted to switch over just for a quick moment to speak about the moment that we are in, that is, you know, COVID-19. Has this had any impact, or do you think it will have an impact on how tax filing season is actually going to go? Because I can imagine there are a lot of implications when we're considering that a lot of businesses have shut down, people don't have incomes, or they've reduced their incomes. What type of impacts are you sort of either already dealing with or thinking about going forward?
Well, I think SARS is very behind on their collection targets, which are set by National Treasury at the beginning of the financial year. We're quite a bit behind. Even before COVID-19 hit, SARS needed to collect an extra 40 billion in order to make their targets. And now that COVID-19 has come, you know, obviously that gap has gotten bigger and bigger. So we have a big tax collection problem in the country, and that is not just as a result of taxpayers being errant or SARS not enforcing the collection, you know, rights, but it's also because, like you say, a lot of businesses have closed down, a lot of people have lost their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So it is looking quite bleak at the moment, and we'll have a lot to do after COVID passes in terms of trying to catch up and see how the economy can recover. And as far as how that impacts SARS's operation, I think the self-assessment tool is a really good development because it makes it easier for taxpayers to actually comply with their filing obligations timeously. And also, a lot of taxpayers, you know, there might be some doubts about where SARS is getting the information to do your return, et cetera, et cetera. So all of your information is available to SARS from your employer, from financial institutions such as banks, from your medical aid schemes, your retirement annuity fund administrators, and other third-party data providers. So SARS, you know, does have access to that information, and I think it's quite wise of them to make use of that information to simplify the process of submitting returns for taxpayers. So it's going to be very interesting going forward. I think this is very innovative from on behalf of SARS for them to come up with something like this, because then you don't have taxpayers who are lagging behind and not, for instance, submitting their returns. Because if you do it for taxpayers and then they agree with the assessment, it just simplifies life for everybody.
All of these developments and the innovation that you're talking about, as a good step forward on the side of SARS, is all in an effort to make sure that ordinary South Africans are more tax compliant. What actually happens when an individual is non-compliant or actually owes SARS?
Well, SARS has a few tools at their disposal that they can use. So if, for instance, a taxpayer just doesn't submit their return at all, then they charge interest on any tax that's payable on that, and they can hit you with administrative non-compliance penalties. So the longer you wait to submit your return, the more the interest and the penalties pile up, right? So that's the first thing. And also, if you don't pay SARS, SARS actually can send you a letter of demand and also find third parties that owe you money. So for instance, if you have a debtor out there somewhere and they haven't paid you, SARS can go to your debtor and say, don't pay taxpayer A, actually give that money to me. And also SARS has the power to go into your bank account and take the money. So if, for instance, you don't pay SARS for long periods of time and they sent you a letter of demand and you still don't make payments of your obligations, then they can actually go into your bank account and take the money, without your consent.
That's actually quite deep in terms of the powers that SARS does have. But on the side of enforcement, do you see the current economic crisis affecting SARS's ability to enforce those rules? Do you see that as an impediment? Do you see them perhaps taking a more compassionate sort of view on the enforcement of tax laws because of the strain that consumers just are under at the moment?
Not at all. So you remember, SARS had, you know, a duty to collect taxes in terms of the SARS Act and into the Tax Administration Act and all of the other tax acts. So SARS must collect what is due to the state from taxpayers. So there is no room for compassion on the side of SARS. If a taxpayer is struggling to make payment on their obligations, then they should enter into a payment arrangement with SARS or something similar. But you can't just sit at home and think that SARS is going to show you any sort of compassion. Like I say, SARS is behind on collection targets. And, you know, this obviously means that the government has less money to implement its programs and, you know, give to grants and for roads and for all these social programs that we need. So there is no room, unfortunately, where SARS has a discretion not to collect tax. They must collect the tax. So if you are unable to make payment of your tax obligations, you should approach SARS and ask for some sort of payment arrangement. And like I say to you, it's a desperate time for everybody, and it's a desperate time for SARS as well. You know, they have a job to do. We all understand, you know, what impact the COVID-19 pandemic has had on everybody, on consumers and SARS alike. So, you know, you should actually take a proactive stance if you're unable to make payment of your tax and make an arrangement with SARS. I don't foresee that there'll be any compassion forthcoming from SARS. National Treasury did release some tax relief bills where, because of COVID-19, you know, they've made some concessions. But obviously this has to be introduced into the legislation, and SARS needs to follow the tax legislation. So that's as far as the wiggle room for SARS goes. It has to be in compliance with the legislation.
It certainly does sound, you know, one of those things. I was actually laughing to myself when you started talking earlier on when about the compassion, and you just flat out said no, because you know, we and I think the way that you did explain it, that things are hard on both sides, both the side of the consumer and also the side of SARS itself, which is, you know, vastly behind on its tax collection regime right now. But, you know, as a point of interest, what type of tax questions or tax law questions has COVID-19 actually brought about, you know, that in a normal situation, you know, year in, year out, there's certain trends you become used to. But what type of interesting questions have you noted that COVID-19 has brought about in line with tax?
Well, because filing season for individuals just started with these auto assessments and actually only really starts on the 1st of September, on the side of individual taxpayers, there hasn't really been any impact or queries because obviously the last tax year closed quite a bit before we were hit by the COVID pandemic. The biggest impact you actually see is on companies. You know, who are operating and kind of have to submit provisional tax returns and things of that nature. So they've actually, National Treasury has granted special concessions to companies where they actually grant them deductions from their taxable income of expenditure, for instance, you know, incurred in relation to curbing the COVID-19 spread of the infections, or, you know, expenditure incurred for assisting employees in carrying on with their work, you know, with these changed kind of work circumstances that we have and things like that. So for individuals, I don't think that the impact is immediate. You can't really see the impact. It's just mostly for companies and employers where the relief has been granted.
Okay, cool. So in the last part, because it is Women's Month, and in that spirit, we just wanted to get your take, sort of shifting a little bit from the normal tax conversation, to just get your take on, as a black woman in corporate, what kind of transformative action would you actually like to see happening, or have been happy to see in the legal profession?
The legal profession is still quite behind in terms of transformation, which is unfortunate, but you know, it's just the state of how things are at the moment. My advice to any aspiring kind of legal practitioners would be, you know, just get your foot in the door. You know, that's the first thing you need to do. So if you can make sure that you have the best kind of CV from straight out of university. So the work starts at university, and I learned this lesson the hard way, you know, because in university I was just studying and that was that. But you should try to get some vacation work that some of the big firms do and some of the small firms do. So apply as much as you can for the VAC work programs that the companies have. Make sure your marks are really good. You know, just make sure you have the best chance stepping out of university. That's the first thing. The second thing, most people leave applying for articles too late. So when you want to apply for articles, you should start thinking about where you want to go from second year university already, right? So you should start doing your research, seeing which field of law you want to be involved in, what firms are out there, what firms you think that you would want to apply to, and then in third year, then start submitting your applications for articles, because it becomes very difficult if you leave it until your final year in university to actually apply for articles. And a lot of young people don't know this, and you know, you become shocked and surprised in your final year, say 2020 is your final year in university, and then you start submitting your applications, and then you find out some of the firms are actually already recruiting for 2022, you know. So My advice would be start as early as possible and get your CV, start working on your CV as early as possible at varsity level already. Second, I would say the most important thing for black women especially is to get your foot in the door, right? So once you have those articles, you now have one foot in the door. And it is difficult, I won't lie to you. It's quite tricky because, you know, you are surrounded by a majority of the time people that don't look like you, right? And usually nobody in the room looks like you. But if you, I think, are passionate about what you do, that's the first thing, because you will hate any job that you're not passionate about. And second, if you find a mentor, preferably in the space that you work in, right? So a mentor, and it doesn't have to be another black woman. It doesn't have to be another black man. it can just be anybody who you kind of gel with, who can walk you through the maze of corporate South Africa. So it is very difficult, and there's landmines and everything. So you do need somebody who can kind of, you know, you can talk to about dealing with certain kinds of situations and trying to navigate your way through. And the final thing I would say is, besides a mentor, you should try to find yourself a sponsor, okay? And your sponsor, mentorship and sponsorship are two different things. So mentorship is, you know, I'm guiding you in your personal kind of life. I don't get involved in anything sort of, you know, I'm just a listening ear and I'm just there to advise you. Whereas sponsorship is somebody who is personally invested in your growth within the company. So obviously your sponsor would need to be somebody within the company who has some kind of sway, you know, some kind of influence, who can actually sponsor your progression up the ladder. So somebody who can be your cheerleader, somebody who can be your defender when you need, but it's just about building those solid relationships. And like I say, it is tough, and you will have, unfortunately, situations of racism, sexism, whatever other isms that you will face, especially as a black woman. But, you know, it's possible. It can be done. And especially if you have someone that can hold your hand through it all, that's the most important thing, I think.
So that was us with Ntabeleng Sekabate, who is an executive under the tax department at ENS Africa, just giving us some insight into what the tax filing season is going to be looking like this year, that starts on the 1st of September. And she's just saying that, guys, just because COVID-19 is happening does not mean you should be sitting at home and hoping that SARS is going to be compassionate about what's going on in the economy. People need to be proactive and just make sure that they take the necessary steps to be compliant. Ending off just talking about what it means, what corporate South Africa is looking like as a black female professional, and she's talking about making sure that you get that experience even before you get into formal working, vac work, talking about getting mentors, and also making the differentiation between having a mentor and actually having a sponsor who is invested in your personal growth. So that's been it. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show.
The Business Buzz.
So that's it in terms of this edition of The Business Buzz. Thank you so much to Dr. Sean Muller from the UJ for just sharing some insights into the state of public finances. It's actually quite dire just hearing how much burden the state actually has to take on to fund some of its activities, together with Ntabeleng Sekabate from ENS Africa. You know, just highlighting the fact that apart from... If you got a salary decrease or something like that, then your tax went down. That's as far as any relief is actually going to go. Just make sure that you are tax compliant from that point of view. So that's been it. My thoughts is that tax, it's just one of those things, and it's going to become very important going forward, especially in this position that the government finds itself, where they need to be funding all of these social activities, all these social programs to help South Africans with the effects of COVID-19, but at the same time, you have a tax base that is relatively small and somewhat stagnant, like what Dr. Muller was talking about. And how the government funds itself going forward will be an important consideration and will place either an additional burden on us in future, especially if it goes beyond a certain point and there is always that looming risk of a debt crisis going forward. Let us know what you think. You can find us on Facebook. That's Vow FM Office of Wits. You can also find our other Facebook page. That is the Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at Vow FM, and our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. You can also search for us on iono.fm for our podcasts. And you can also find our other podcasts on wits.journalism.co.za/business. So with that, we've reached the end of the show. Thank you to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Kotlano Serame, together with our executive producer, Glory Mabuza. Our producers are Slin Lemusivi and Taro Tremba, together with the Simbarashe Honde. Don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Don't turn that dial. There's more great content coming up on the VAL FM lineup. So for myself, Leo Mob Justice Gawaza, and the rest of the team, it is take care.
Mob Justice on the Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.